Prime Minister will head to climate talks in Glasgow at the end of the week with a new commitment that Australia will reach net zero emissions by 2050. This is after the Nats gave in principle support for the policy. It's not the first time Australia's made last-minute big changes to its environmental policies ahead of major international talks. Max Chalmers has been taking a look. Hi, Max.
Hi, Fran. Good morning again. Now, I want you to picture something. It's former Australian Prime Minister Bob Hawke. He's in a dingy room and he's got a grey suit on that pretty much matches the colour of his hair. It's May 1989 and he's about to do a big policy backflip. I don't know how he was feeling at the time, but recordings from that time, he looks a bit morose as he starts to speak to the gathered journalists.
What we want to do, this comprehensive protection of the environment in the Antarctic, is not going to be a simple process. Putting it the other way, it's going to be an extremely hard row to hoe because there is, as we understand it, a fair degree of opposition.
That was Bob Hawke confirming his cabinet would withdraw support for an agreement allowing mining in Antarctica. A year earlier, the agreement had looked like an absolute sure thing. But speaking in May 1989, Bob Hawke acknowledged that there was a rapid shift in thinking happening on environmental protection.
We don't live in a static world. I think the attitudes of governments today in regard to environmental issues is markedly different to what it was even 12 months ago. So we don't believe that we're acting, as I say, in a static environment which is incapable of change of attitude and opinion. And we think we've got a responsibility to try and change attitudes.
As we know, that mission to change attitudes was a success. In 1991, a treaty protecting Antarctica as a natural reserve was signed, a major, major turnaround for the world. Ruth Morgan is the director of the Centre for Environmental History at ANU, and I called her to ask why the Hawke government had changed its mind on the issue.
And this was, you know, coming in the wake of the Franklin Dams issue. This was the period of sustainable development. There was a real green decade in Australia. And so when public opinion started to turn, Hawke and his ministers decided, actually, we shouldn't be going ahead with this.
On Antarctic protection, there was domestic pressure from the public as well as political pressure from then opposition leader John Howard. And the decade had also seen the rise of green NGOs. Australia was a player in other big environmental talks too, including the agreement to cut the use of chlorofluorocarbons that were expanding a hole in the ozone layer. And Ruth Morgan says Australia pretty much strong-armed its way into that process, much to the annoyance of the United States. But by the early 90s, things were starting to change as the economic picture here got worse. And that was happening just as international talks on climate change were starting to ramp up.
There's still this optimism, though, in the early 90s. We've got the signing of the Framework Convention on Climate Change. But by the mid-90s, that has started to turn, particularly among countries like Australia. There's this real concern about what the agreements might mean for Australia's primary industries.
And as climate change emerges as the big issue, Australia's approach to international talks starts to change too.
Within a relatively short window of time, Australia's right there from the beginning in 1992 with the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, with the eighth signatory out of, I think, you know, over 100 to sign up straight away. But then by the negotiations for Kyoto, by 97, this is starting to sour, that Australia is refusing any binding agreements around emissions, really does not want to see any disadvantage.
Australia won big concessions at Kyoto, but it angered environmental groups as well as some in the international community. And here's Rit Bjerregaard from the European Commission speaking after the talks.
It's quite clear that we are left with problems. We are left with problems with Australia, who is allowed to have a growth in emissions. We are left with problems with Russia and Ukraine, who is allowed to stabilize, and it's quite clear that they have a very big potential, and we're going to deal with that in the future.
Australia obviously refused to ratify Kyoto until 2007. And as we know only too well, Fran, from there, climate proved to be one of the most politically fraught issues Australian governments would try and deal with. ANU environmental historian Ruth Morgan says that from the first global environmental conferences in the 70s until now, there has been something consistent about how Australia approached these issues on the world stage.
governments such as Australia's have been trying to constantly keep in the same frame of vision both domestic pressures and international pressures. And I think now they're both increasingly on the same page, which is why I think we're seeing so much pressure on the Morrison government to actually contribute constructively to these negotiations.
Fran, the Prime Minister will be heading to climate talks in Glasgow on Thursday with this new target in his pocket. We'll have to wait and see what role Australia plays at those talks this time around.
Thanks very much, Max. And yes, after 7:30, I'll be joined by Barnaby Joyce to talk about the agreement that the Nats came to yesterday and how that plays into now this plan, which we still haven't seen from the government in terms of how we get to net zero by 2050.